This is a story about making it in business, or hoping to.
I think about failure all the time. I think if you don't think about it, you're probably fooling yourself.
About celebrating the fruits of years of hard labour.
It was like the heavens opened and water was gushing down on us. It was a real highlight of our life.
Keeping your head during a white-knuckle ride.
I was thinking, you know, by the time I'm there, life's just going to be easy. I'm going to be on the gravy train. We'll have kind of made it. But, you know, you're still shitting yourself just as much.
And trying to create something that has meaning.
I don't really care what happens personally or otherwise, other than really desperately wanting to create some legacy out of this. That, for me, is the thing that actually excites me.
Welcome to The Businesses of Tomorrow, a new podcast that follows Australian firms as they look to build up their big idea, go global, or change the world. These firms will go on the trip of a lifetime to the heart of the tech industry.
You could build a LinkedIn now for $100,000 and three people.
And to the most dynamic economy in the world.
The work ethic in China is extraordinary.
There will be down days.
Over the last few days, we've visited Uber and Airbnb. Like, they basically started about the same time that we started. There's an element you're like, wow, these guys are great, and then it's like, geez, we're really crap.
Sleepless nights.
Where do you take a company that's growing so quickly and then sort of worrying that will I have the energy to keep going, keep innovating and keep thinking up new things and keeping pace with the speed of the world.
And those moments that make all the hard work worthwhile.
That's amazing.
Okay, time to get champagne.
I'm Jackson Hewitt, a journalist at The Australian newspaper, and I hope you will join me and some incredible businesses on their very personal journeys.
Okay, so I'm going to book Craig's Honda Civic. Oh, I've already booked it. I've booked Craig's Honda Civic from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. So let's just click this button.
This is Will Davies, founder of the peer-to-peer car sharing service Car Next Door, showing me how the service works.
Let's hit it.
Okay, let's head over.
So I'm just going to put the code in the lockbox. Then it unlocks.
There's your key.
There's my little fob.
Yep.
Okay, here we are.
And how much is this car per hour?
So this is $5 an hour, and
that's so much less than the rental car.
$30 a day. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you can get it for the day, $30. And if you just want to, you know, we're borrowing this car for an hour now. If you just wanted to take your car, go up, do the shopping, you know, it's a 3 kilometre round trip or something like that. You pay like literally $6, $7. So it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, it's cheaper than an Uber.
Yeah, exactly. I did a trip last week, went and visited a mate, and I checked on Uber. It would have cost me $60, and it cost $20 on Car Next Door just to go to his place, have dinner, and then come back.
And Will, why did you start Car Next Door?
So the reason we started it was I had a mortgage broking business. It was going really well, but I decided, I had a very strong feeling that I really wanted to be playing a big part in reducing the amount of carbon going into the world. I think humans are kind of buggering this place up really fast at the moment, and we need to dramatically change the way we're doing a whole heap of things environmentally. But I think the most pressing issue is carbon reduction. So I decided that I wanted to play a big part in reducing the amount of carbon going into the atmosphere, and couldn't work out how mortgage broking was going to be helping with carbon reduction. I'd been a long-term car sharing user, but thought that the idea of using people's cars rather than buying another car and sitting on there was just a much smarter way to do it. So yeah, made the decision to launch into it.
And we're driving through Surry Hills at the moment, and I am looking at a lot of cars just parked on the street. What do you think when you see all these cars just sitting here really idle all day long?
I see opportunity, Jackson. Most cars sit around doing absolutely nothing most of the time. Half of a car's emissions are created in its manufacture. So, yeah, I see opportunity. I also see waste, because we just, all of these cars that are sitting around, they should either be driving or we shouldn't need them. And so, yeah, there's just, But there is, it's both. It is huge opportunity because there is so much waste. Every one of these cars that we're driving past now, someone's invested 15,000-20,000 bucks into owning that car.
At a minimum, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they hardly ever use it. So it's literally 6,000 or 7,000 bucks a year for something that they use bugger all the time. So it just doesn't. It's like actually really stupid the way that we're currently doing it.
Raised on a beef farm near Wagga, Will looks pretty much like he sounds. A big, plain-spoken man, never out of a pair of Blundstone boots. Will wants to make a big change and make money for himself and car owners in the process. But first, he needs to raise some more capital.
It's always a worrying time when you're raising capital. We need to get over $2 million raised in order for the raise to go ahead.
Car Next Door is what's known as a two-sided matching platform. He matches car owners with car renters, the same way Airbnb matches rooms with travellers. Now, the trick with these businesses is that you need lots and lots of scale. Will needs to convince car owners to put their cars on the platform and users to see lots of cars available wherever they need it to make it a more convenient option than a taxi or a rental car. So, even though the company is growing, he needs cash to keep promoting the service. It's a winner-take-all market, and coming second is as good as last. Will has to convince his investors that he can be the dominant player, so they continue to back him.
All it really takes is one of these parties to go, oh, look, we've changed our mind, we can't put in our $500,000 anymore, and all of a sudden we've got no money coming in. If that happens, then we've got to make dramatic change in the business fast because we'll run out of cash.
Will needs money to help do his bit for the next generation. Hannah Krawchuk also has her eye on the future.
I started this business because I had given birth to a beautiful little baby boy 9 years ago who was very unsettled, and he did not sleep for longer than 45 minutes at a time. As you can imagine, that was really, really grueling for my husband and I, and we tried everything to stop him crying and to get him sleeping, and we couldn't find any products that we could buy that would help him achieve better sleep. So I noticed that he slept, when he was sleeping, he would sleep with his arms up. And I also knew from the hospital that swaddling a baby should help them settle and sleep better. And all the swaddles in the marketplace made me swaddle him with his arms down or across his chest. And I kept walking into his room and he was crying, and he would have come out of those swaddles. And I would find those swaddles up over his face, and all sorts of dangerous things were happening in the cot while I wasn't there. So my background is in fashion and textile design, and I had a look at this and I saw, hang on, he sleeps with his arms up, that's where he's most comfortable, but swaddling is medically proven to help babies sleep. So I thought, I can do this better. And I started drawing some garments, and I came up with a design. I cut it out, I bought some fabric, cut it out, made a pattern, etc., sewed it up. And I gave it to two friends, and I said, please, can you try this on your baby? They had newborns at the time, whereas my son was too old already. And they both rang me in the morning, and they said, you're not going to believe it, but my baby slept through the night. So 100% success rate.
Hello.
That's my 11-week-old daughter, Ruby. She's in a love-to-dream suit. It makes her look a bit like a snow angel, or she's in a Christmas stocking. Her arms are up so she can suck on her hands through the cloth, but they can't go any higher and trigger her startle reflex and wake her up in the middle of the night. And there's a zip, which means no complicated wrapping at a time when you are most exhausted.
Firsthand, I experienced a devastation of sleeplessness, and becoming a new parent is such a challenging time that if I could help in some way, then I was going to do that. And now we're 9 years down the track, and we're helping.
And I'm looking at a big map of the world that says sharing the love across the globe. How many of your swaddles are you selling around the world?
Well, this year we're going to sell over 1 million swaddles around the world, which is really, really an amazing accomplishment from a little brand that was started in the garage, as most businesses start. The products are available in 45 countries around the world and growing.
By any stretch of the imagination, Love to Dream is a true success story. Its founder, Hannah Krawchuk, has business in the blood. Her Russian Jewish immigrant parents never shielded her from the good, the bad, and the downright scary of being an entrepreneur. Under Hannah's bubbly exterior and ready laugh, there are nerves of steel and a laser focus.
Hannah, just I've got to say, one of the things that's interesting about being here in your office is how few people work here.
When people look at our business, what they need to understand is that we're a stock service business. We are not a fashion business. So we don't have thousands and thousands of designs every season. We've got our stock standard designs that were repeated every season, every year. Therefore, our stock holding doesn't have to be enormous, and therefore our design team doesn't have to be enormous to churn out designs. We just sell what sells. And therefore, we can keep the team really lean. So there are only 20 of us. And yes, with 20 people, we can service 45 countries.
What that means is Love to Dream can scale. They have the designs, the packaging, and if they grow, they get the manufacturer in China to ramp up production. So they have their eyes on the biggest market in the world.
We are working really hard on the American market because it's one of the biggest swaddling markets in the world. They have 4 million babies born a year, so that could be very meaningful to our business. So we are at the moment in a very exciting there's a very exciting potential on the horizon for Love to Dream in the US. Target have started trialing our products in 120 stores, and they've got 1,800 and something stores. So the potential to make the brand available across the entire country is unbelievable. The other really important thing about going into Target in the US and having national reach, if we can get to the 1,800 stores, is the endorsement of the brand. When our distributor, say, in the UK learns, wow, you're in Target, well, they can then go and approach their major retailers and say, hang on, guys, you're missing out on an opportunity. So it's not just what will it do for the business in the US, it's what will it do for the business as a whole.
All the best business ideas emerge from the life experiences of their founders.
And I sort of cast my mind back to when I was sort of 17, 18. And I'd go out with all of my friends to really late at night, and we'd be having a really great time. And then I'd go home and I'd stay at one of my friend's house, and I'd just sort of sleep on the floor. But I'd always set my alarm for 6 o'clock to get home, to be there to help my mum when my brother woke up.
That's Jordan O'Reilly. He spent his childhood looking after his little brother Shane.
My brother Shane was a year younger than me, and he was my best friend. And he was an incredible young guy. He had quite a profound form of cerebral palsy that meant he relied on direct one-to-one care and support pretty much every day of his life. He had only really control and the use of sort of one hand, which was helpful, but intellectually he was incredible. He was the most engaged, amazing young person, and really for my sister and I taught us a huge amount about humanity. And we got to see from a very early age that disability really is just a form of human diversity. It was really heartbreaking as we sort of started to move towards adulthood and just realised how different his life was going to be as an adult compared to ours, simply because he had a disability and simply because of the, you know, systematic and systemic barriers facing people with disabilities in Australia and attitudes. And it just really, it lit a fire in my belly to want to create change and work with him and my sister to do better. We started to dream about an organisation that could offer my brother a real job, you know, because no one else would. And we launched that that charity, Fighting Chance. We opened a little office. We didn't really know what we were going to do, but we had this dream, and Shane came in and he picked where he was going to sit, and you know, he was very excited for it, and all of a sudden he passed away. It was an incredibly difficult moment for my sister and I, because so much of what we were doing was for him and with him. You know, it was that point we decided that we wanted to keep doing this for the rest of our lives, in his memory and in his honour, and try to create the world that he should have had.
Jordan could have walked away after all those years of trying to make a better life for Shane. Instead, he invented a brand new concept that has the potential to change the entire sector.
HireUp is an online platform that gives Australians with disability the power to find, hire and manage their very own support workers.
Jordan understands the problem from both sides.
As we sort of grew to adulthood, and as the responsibility sort of fell to me to be providing more, you know, support in Shane's life, I just started to realise what a huge thing that was in his life to have care workers coming in. And I got to see the challenges and the pain points facing people like him in finding care. You know, there was sort of a bit of a revolving door of care workers coming through the house. It often cost an absolute fortune. You know, if you had to get a last minute agency staff, it might cost $80, $90, $100 type thing for the hour, knowing the worker was only being paid $20 or so. Just the inefficiency of the system. And so really sort of experiencing that as a family member and seeing that for my brother. And then, you know, a couple of years later, as I started university and started working as an occupational therapist and started working as a support worker, I got to see that the system was pretty miserable for support workers as well, and let a lot of good support workers down.
So no one was happy, but can business be the solution?
I started a not-for-profit in 2011, and I really got to see both the great things about, you know, the philanthropic not-for-profit world, but also the challenges, you know, of living grant to grant, you know, going from one grant acquittal to an application for the next one. When we came up with the idea for HireUp, you know, we knew that there was a strong financial model that sat behind the business. We knew that we didn't necessarily need philanthropic money to make this work, but we knew we were going to need investment to get going, but not knowing how we were going to get support around that, being really fearful of this idea of sort of, you know, aggressive venture capital. And it took me a good 6 months till I finally stumbled upon this relatively new idea of impact investing. Can we use business for good? Can we use commercial enterprises to create both, you know, financial and social returns? And HireUp, I hope, is forming into a really excellent example of that.
So no pressure on Jordan then. While creating a new model for disability support, he hopes to also prove the business case for impact investing. Oh, and he's only 29. But will that altruism and youthful spirit help him open the right doors? He certainly has big plans.
2018 is going to be the biggest year for HireUp. We've grown from somewhere in the region of sort of 5,000 users to around 20,000 users in just 1 year. We're hoping to really step that up. HireUp is in a really strong position. We've got really great product market fit. We understand, you know, a huge amount of our customers are really loving what we're doing. And so the plan is really to continue to invest in the team. We want to launch a huge range of new features on our platform, but we also want to launch our first ever mobile application, which is very exciting. We want to invest in the marketing. We've not really done any marketing and grown really, really significantly in the last 3 years. So across the people, across the technology, across the marketing, it really does feel to me like it's time to really see whether we can build one of Australia's, you know, most exciting businesses, especially because of the people that we're supporting through it.
From helping hands to heavy industry.
This is a coal train heading to the port of Newcastle, fully loaded. This is the Great Northern Line, so it goes right up through into Gunnedah and the Gunnedah Basin.
And that was long. That was a lot of carriages.
That was long. It would have been over a kilometre long.
And every couple of hours that one comes through.
Sometimes more regular, yeah.
I'm driving through coal country, 2 hours north of Sydney, with Christian Damstra.
This has all been mined over here on the right. This is actually rehabilitation. So that's been mined, reshaped, seeded, trees planted, final product.
So a lot of these rolling hills might actually be rehabilitated mine sites.
The hills tend to move around here.
Christian runs Dampstra Technology. The company operates software that ensures contractors on mine sites, construction sites and other big projects have done induction training, have the right qualifications and are sober when they turn up to work. If a contractor doesn't pass muster, they don't get through the turnstiles.
So right now we're looking at the overburden spoils. They dump that so they can get down to the coal seam.
And it is a very big mine. It looked like it was about a kilometre square. Is that about right?
Have to be at least that. This one's probably more like 4 kilometres square. A site like this could have probably anywhere up to 250, 300 permanents on site and probably a couple of thousand contractors. That's where the risk comes in. The absolute worst case scenario, you have a fatality or an injury and no one wants either of those to occur. There's, of course, the financial losses that go along with damaging equipment.
And so the calculation that a mining company has made is preventing accidents, preventing injury, making sure that the staff is fully accredited, fully trained, really for them is a really significant investment with a very clear return on investment.
Absolutely. They want to keep people safe. So if we can help them do that by tracking those skills and the competencies and ensuring people have got the right e-learning, the right verification of competencies and the right documents in place at any given time, then we're doing our job.
And you used to do this too, right? You used to work on these sites?
Some of the best years of my career were spent in working in the mines. Electrician by trade and had a great time working on them. Made a lot of friendships for life and worked up at Drayton Coal, actually, that was closed down last year. It was a little bit sad, but great community and a great environment working in the mines.
Christian worked out pretty early on it was better to work for the mines rather than in the mines. Mining companies have deep pockets, but it's a boom and bust industry, so they like to be able to outsource non-core parts of the business. Christian Dampstra has only been too happy to help. The mining electrician had bigger ambitions, and they paid off. In a small town, though, not everyone likes to celebrate success.
You'll do business with people who go, well, I used to go to school with that person, or I know that person, and you get a bit of tall poppy syndrome, which is never easy to deal with, and you've got to be very careful about how you deal with that type of thing.
Do you find, though, that maybe you develop a bit of a thick skin or a bit of a front when you have to deal with that sort of stuff?
Absolutely. If you didn't, you'd spend a lot of time naked and shivering under the table.
And that's the last place you'll find Christian Dampstra. He needs to be moving forward.
In the last 12 months, we've grown from one office. We now have offices in Newcastle, Christchurch, New Zealand, Melbourne, the Philippines. The United States of America is a major growth market for us in the next 12 months. One large mining client over there could return 50% of the revenue I earn in Australia.
So he's moving with his wife and kids to Denver. It's a bold move, fraught with risk. But just like the coal mine town of Singleton could use some renewal, I reckon Christian does too.
Born and bred in Singleton. Only place I've ever lived, but ready for a change.
Christian, Jordan, Hannah and Will are all poised on the brink of true success. They have navigated the treacherous waters of startup land, but from here the journey only gets harder and the stakes higher. These four very different but high-potential Australian founders will meet each other for the first time at the epicentre of innovation, Silicon Valley.
Hey, my name's Alan Blue. I am a co-founder and vice president of product management here at LinkedIn.
Hi, my name is Tom Kosnick, and I teach entrepreneurship at Stanford University.
Welcome to IDEO. We're so glad that you guys can join us.
Can exposure to some of the most innovative concepts in the world transform these businesses? Our four companies joined 16 others on a global tour. It's the trip of a lifetime for any company looking to become a world beater, and we'll travel right alongside them. I'm Jackson Hewitt. Thanks for listening to this podcast. It is sponsored by Westpac, and all the companies featured in this episode are the winners of Westpac's inaugural Businesses of Tomorrow program. To find out how you can apply to the program, go to businessesoftomorrow.com.au. I do hope you've enjoyed this podcast. There is plenty more to come from us in this series, so stick with us. And if you did like it, please give us a rating on your favourite listening app or tell a friend or two. We'd love this podcast to scale. This podcast was mixed by Taylor Denny, and the consulting producer is Catherine Franey. Until next week, goodbye.